Hello, listeners of the Weekly Defence podcast. This week, we have a bonus episode for you. Episode 4 of our new Revolutions in Vertical Flight podcast, which looks at the future of military rotorcraft. The full series is available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're at that inflection point now where the enduring fleet is no longer has the capability to be modernized or upgraded to the point that it's going to meet the vertical lift requirements on the modern battlefield.
Platform must be survivable, must defend itself, and it also must be able to reach out and touch an enemy and provide an effect on the battlefield.
And that allows us to bring in some of these advanced sustainment technologies, techniques, and processes that simply didn't exist 30 years ago or 50 years ago when some of these platforms were initially put on the scene or had their first flight opportunities.
It's no exaggeration that future rotorcraft technologies will dramatically reshape the way the military conducts operations, with new platforms offering advantages in endurance and manoeuvrability. Many of these developments have a long heritage, perhaps most notably through the Bell Boeing V-22 Osprey program, which we covered last episode. However, recent innovations have driven increased military interest in new rotorcraft configurations beyond the traditional helicopter. This trend is most clearly seen in the US and sits firmly in the lap of the US Army, which has started the Future Vertical Lift Initiative. This is Mike Hirscherberg, the Executive Director of the Vertical Flight Society.
The technology development over the last 20 or 30 years has really shown there's real potential in advanced configurations and advanced technology. So in the 1970s and 80s, the U.S. military developed some of the most advanced rotorcraft in the world with the Apache and the Blackhawk. And those are just fantastic aircraft that really no one else in the world has aircraft that are as capable and efficient and effective as those aircraft and similar. But then, over the years, it was more and more upgrades of existing design. So, with the Huey series, which were originally developed in the late 50s and 1960s. They've run out of letters, so they've got the most advanced versions that you can get with kind of early 21st century technology. But if you started from scratch, how would you be able to design an aircraft that's revolutionary? And you can kind of get an analogy between the old flip phones, and the smartphone. So there's, you can have a fantastic non-smartphone, but it'll make phone calls, and you can do texting, you can do a few other things. But the difference between a smartphone and a non-smartphone is just tremendous. It's not a phone anymore. It's a mobile office or a mobile computer that also lets you make phone calls and everything else. So that's the kind of technology leap that the Future Vertical Lift program is planning on, is when you start with a clean design and you look at these advanced requirements for range and payload and capabilities, speed that the Army and other services are interested in, you can really make a huge leap, like with Apple and Android with the smartphones, that's so revolutionary you can't really even imagine how it's going to be different than a helicopter today. And the Future Vertical Lift program has really shown that capabilities.
Welcome to Shepherd Studios' Revolutions in Vertical Flight, brought to you in partnership with Bell. Over the course of 6 episodes, we are looking at the history of vertical flight and discover the key pioneers and revolutionary moments that created the rotorcraft industry we know today. And we consider the future revolutions, how next-generation rotorcraft will shape the future battle space, and hear how innovation underway today will enable the urban air mobility of tomorrow. Future Vertical Lift is formed of 2 major programs. The Future Attack Reconnaissance Aircraft, or FARA, will provide a light scout and aims to fill an armed reconnaissance capability gap left by the retirement of the Bell OH-58 Kiowa Warrior in 2017. The second programme, the Future Long-Range Assault Aircraft, or FLARA, aims to replace Sikorsky's UH-60 Black Hawks. FVL should be seen in the context of a rapidly evolving US Army, where new configurations of aircraft will help transform the way in which the service operates. Here's Carvel Chalk, who is Director of Aviation Development at the US Army's Combat Capability Development and Missile Center.
As we look to move aviation from what's shown on the left, the classic single main rotor helicopter, and seek out opportunities to use new concepts or combinations of old concepts that are now available because of advances in technology, we too are at an inflection point, and one hopes that in the decades to come, history will look back on this point in time and see us as a community making a strategic shift in our approach to future vertical lift systems, with perhaps an enduring legacy that lasts well into the future for our future soldiers in aviation.
The US Army doesn't just want much faster aircraft with much further range. It wants them to cost the same to build, operate, and maintain as its current helicopters. The new platforms make use of advances in tiltrotor, coaxial, and compound technologies, addressing new demands that are being placed on VTOL platforms by what has been dubbed multi-domain operations. This is being driven by the increasing focus on the potential for peer conflict, rather than the counter-insurgency missions of recent conflicts. These aircraft must be capable of penetrating cutting-edge Russian and Chinese air defences. The evolutionary improvement on the helicopter designs that the world has known since the 1950s are no longer sufficient. This is Carl Kaufman, who is Director of Advanced Vertical Lift Sales and Strategy at Bell.
So we have an enduring fleet now that we've had an evolution of modernization efforts to continue to increase the capabilities of those aircraft, the enduring fleet aircraft that the warfighter is working with now. We've had a marked change in competitor. People refer to our potential adversaries out there, primarily Russians and Chinese, as near-peer competitors. I would submit to you that they're probably peer competitors. So we're at that inflection point now where the enduring fleet is no longer has the capability to be modernized or upgraded to the point that it's going to meet the vertical lift requirements on the modern battlefield. So it's going to take a marked revolution in capability, not an additional evolution in capability. And that's what we're getting to in Bell's efforts with the Future Attack Reconnaissance and long-range assault aircraft.
Such lofty ambitions underpin the designs vying for FARA. The five competitors are Bell, Boeing, Karam Aircraft, Sikorsky, and a joint venture between AVX Aircraft Company and L3Harris Technologies. Bell's entry into the competition is its Bell 360 Invictus, which is based on the 525 Relentless platform. This is Frank Lazara, who is Director of Advanced Vertical Lift System Sales and Strategy at Bell, speaking on the floor of the AUSA trade show in October.
The overall approach is a harmonization of a series of high technology readiness level technologies and manufacturability readiness level technologies harmonized by flight control system, automatic digital fly-by-wire flight control system, to provide the advanced performance, but again, control risk to schedule and cost.
The company aims to make the design as sleek as possible in order to keep drag to a minimum.
You can see that in the sleek design of the aircraft. We use the articulated high-flapping main rotor. It is not the exact main rotor from the Bell 525 Relentless commercial aircraft, but it is based on that technology, and so are the blades. They're advanced blades, but these, for example, I'm pointing to blade extenders, those allowed us to take that blade and make it more manufacturable because, for example, there's only 7 degrees of twist in that blade, and we've already gone through some iterations of that, and we're seeing great results.
The wing design plays a naturally important role, taking much of the lift responsibility in high-speed flight.
There you can see the wing. It's a winged aircraft. That is a lift-sharing wing. In high-speed flight, that will assume up to 50% of the lifting responsibility. So if you want your main rotor to be your primary propulsor, your only propulsor, you need to relieve it of some of its lifting responsibility. That's what the lift-sharing wing does. So the combination of that rotor capability, the lift-sharing wing, we have a very efficient propulsor.
Sustainability and self-sufficiency are key elements in Bell's thinking. Here is Mark Thompson, an engineer of Advanced Vertical Lift Systems at Bell.
When you looked at the OH-58 Delta as it used to exist, say, in a heavy division in the Army, that platoon used to go off and just do its job. And it's a lot like what it would need to do in a Russian threat environment in a screen out in front of the major U.S. forces or that sort of thing, where care and feeding just happens. Other than making sure, rations and bullets and so forth get to that unit, it takes care of itself. It's self-sufficient. So it just ties in the same way as our, long-range assault aircraft strategy is planned out.
Affordability is another crucial aspect, particularly in the context of multi-domain operations.
The Army has a comprehensive challenge or opportunity when it comes to redefining their capability set, and certainly in the context of multi-domain operations. So everything we're doing here at Bell is through the lens of the sustainability piece, but also the affordability piece. If the Army goes after all these individual modernization opportunities looking through a soda straw, which they're not doing, we're listening to what they're asking for. But if somebody were to go down that route, you would end up with a lot of very expensive, sort of exotic solutions that combined are unsustainable, both in the normal ups and downs of the fiscal uncertainties that we face, year in and year out, or administrations as they change. So what we're trying to do, and it started, I came to Bell to initially work with V-280, we're trying to do is make that revolutionary capability affordable. And given enough time or money, you can probably make anything fly and fly fast, but the Army doesn't have all kinds of time and money.
The company has worked to develop a culture that supports this outlook. This has been seen throughout its work on the Joint Multi-Role Technology Demonstrator Phase, known as JMRTD, through which it's developing its V-280 tilt rotor. Here's Frank Lazzara again.
So that is the, it's a culture here now at Bell, and it's happened very quickly. I've seen it evolve in my over three years here. Sure, we can create solutions, but we have to create solutions that keep affordability and sustainability firmly in the focal point. And that, starting with JMRTD and the lessons learned carried forward from the V-22 experience into that program, applied at the clean sheet design point of that aircraft, and then all those lessons learned carried over to not only FARA, but combined the JMRTD lessons learned with the Bell 525 Relentless lessons learned and the expertise developed and the talent base developed here at Bell, not only for designing aircraft, but fly-by-wire capability, this rapid approach. So all those things combined, but everything with that overarching theme of sustainable, affordable, because we know that those of us who've lived in the field or been in the military for any length of time know that if you can't keep it flying, it doesn't matter how good it is. It's got to be in the air.
This has informed Bell's approach on technical risk going into both FARA and FLRAA, according to the company. Ryan Enger is program manager of the V-280 Valor.
And when you look at the timelines for first unit equip that's required and the risk tolerance or lack of risk tolerance that the Army can afford to have on these programs, you see the V-280 come into bear with 150 flight hours now in test, leveraging a lot of technology off of the V-22. You see a lot of the technologies on FARA as well that I would deem as low risk, certainly moving into, moving towards a program of record in the 2020s. So that's been Bell's approach, is we don't have time to make a lot of new discoveries on advanced technologies. We do have time to incorporate a lot of proven technologies that we have today that are capable of meeting the requirements that the Army has laid out. So I think that's an approach that we're very comfortable with, and I think we've demonstrated that on JMRTD, and we'll we'll certainly demonstrate on that on FARA as well.
As with all major defense programs, the goal is to achieve the best technological result within realistic constraints.
Hit all our promises on V-280 and JMRTD, and we took the same approach with Bell 360. What technologies do we need to combine to get to that capability that we can accomplish on the timeline? Again, if you had unlimited time and money, then it's, you know, you can go after all kinds of interesting things. But when it comes to national security and evolving threat or emerging threat around the world, you don't always have all kinds of time. And in the fiscal environments we've grown accustomed to in our lifetimes, you don't have unlimited funds.
While FARA will represent a significant advance on past systems, the competitors are working to adapt aspects of their earlier work into their bids. At Boeing, Shane Openshaw is the company's FARA program manager.
The Futures Command customer that has provided the requirements is guiding us, the competitors, throughout the development phase, focusing on what the Army is seeking in the end, and we have a very strong collaborative relationship with our customer. Bottom line is we are leveraging 60 plus years of domain experience, attack reconnaissance capability experience, not reinventing the past, but leveraging the experience there and advancing it and pulling it forward, taking advantage of technologies, and really focusing acutely on what the requirements and what the Army is looking for. Small, light, fast, agile, lethal, survivable with reach, flexibility and operational capability, and their requirements set the framework for what is a challenging problem, actually a challenge in general, to meet all of the requirements. But our focus is on meeting those requirements and creating opportunity to grow and continue to make this aircraft be sustainable and viable for the long term.
Like its competitors, Boeing is keeping a keen eye on time demands and on the bottom line.
Our focus will be there. On the program of record side, cost is critical. Schedule to get this capability into the hands of the warfighter soon is the mantra of the Futures Command. The Army is also keenly interested in the cost of the platform, both from a recurring perspective and from an ONS cost perspective. We are acutely focused on those as well. Next generation sustainment strategies, data, reliability, availability, maintainability, strategy and techniques, upfront design for supportability as part of the initial design activity we're involved in right now. And we are incredibly excited about the opportunity.
The future of Army aviation demands that its rotorcraft will be ready and able to defeat enemy air defences well into the future. This is something that has informed Sikorsky's work in the area for the past decade as it has developed its Raider X platform. Daniel Schultz, president of Sikorsky, explains more.
This aircraft is highly maneuverable. It has high speed. It flies like a helicopter in the low end range, and it exceeds all other helicopter capabilities. But at the same time, it also is a high speed aircraft. Both wings go forward at the same time, so it has lift on both sides. It has the same maneuverability as a small aircraft at high speed, at low level. And then it turns into a helicopter and can land. It is the movement forward at the X. Only an aircraft that can go forward and lead an assault force forward to increase that pathway for the assault aircraft going forward is an aircraft that can fly and penetrate modern enemy air defenses.
The aircraft has developed over the years, with the company emphasizing the heritage of the S-97 as a flying platform.
For 11 years, we've been out there flying this aircraft, its prototype. The first X-2 flew at 261 knots. This aircraft right here is over 209, and it's on its way to 250. Our next aircraft, the growth aircraft above that, will take it even faster. It's flying today with nose-down attitudes. It can fly backwards, it can fly forwards. It can fly low speed like any other helicopter, except twice as good. We're excited about the Army having a new solution for the modern battlefield. Operations on the X can only be made with Raider X.
The company believes the combination of Sikorsky and Lockheed Martin's heritage gives it an advantage. Here is Frank St. John, Executive Vice President of Rotary and Mission Systems at Lockheed Martin.
This is an aircraft like none other, and it is a mature flying machine, and it does have fantastic capabilities as an aircraft. But to meet the Army's demands in the future, and to defeat the threat in 2030 and 2035 and 2040, we're going to need an aircraft that has a very capable set of mission systems. And among those mission systems, we're going to need capability to be survivable. Lockheed Martin brings unmatched survivability to this requirement. Lockheed Martin brings unmatched aircraft survivability equipment, as well as stealth, as well as the autonomy capabilities that we have proven that will allow pilots to get into and out of the most dangerous areas with greater accuracy.
Sikorsky had a wide range of factors to consider as it analyzed the approach it would take to the FARA program. This is Tim Mallier, Sikorsky FARA director, speaking on the floor of the AUSA trade show in October.
I'll just reiterate a couple of things. We had a decision to make when we saw this requirement coming. Were we going to advance one of the helicopters that we had in inventory, advance that design to make them more capable, kind of an incremental step? Or did we need to make a much more bold step and introduce new technology? And that thought process started like 10 years ago as we were flying the X2 demonstrator. And as we did our trade studies over the last couple of years, what's the best way to fill this critical gap for the Army? The conclusion that we came to was, we know, because cost is king, anything that we have to do has to be able to hit the affordability targets for the Army. If you can't afford to buy it, you can't afford to deploy it. So first filter was, anything that we do has to be affordable to the Army to fill this critical gap.
The performance of the aircraft is another critical factor, not only now, but in the coming decades.
After that, it was about performance. Not performance just now in the 2020s, which, you know, we have a lot of, Sikorsky has a lot of aircraft out there in the 2020s. It really started looking forward to what's the need to be asymmetrically advantaged in the next battle, next war, and what technology would take to do that. And when we did those trade studies, what we concluded was it was not going to be an incremental step in technology that would allow us to be retain a competitive advantage against our adversaries in the 2030s, 40s, and 50s. We had to make a more radical improvement in the technology to stay ahead of the threats that face our nation.
Such demands were key to the development of the X-2, a compound helicopter featuring a coaxial design. The X-2 later developed into the radar program that Sikorsky is pitching for FARA.
When you look at it, you see the coaxial rotor technology. We knew that we needed that to provide the growth so that this aircraft can be an enduring capability for the next 30, 40, 50 years. If you look at the legacy of the Black Hawk, it's over 40 years in service and still fighting the battle every day. That's what we need out of the FARA. That's what we think the Army needs out of FARA. So that drove us to X-2 and the Raider X that just introduced today.
The Raider X will offer the Army much more maneuverability, a benefit provided by the coaxial system.
And a couple of the points that Dan and Frank tried to make was, what does that X-2 actually offer the warfighter? Much more speed. Maneuverability is something that you don't really think about that much. Helicopters seem highly maneuverable, but when you look at this X-2 with the coaxial rotor system, they'll talk about that in a minute. The maneuverability of this aircraft is unequaled by anything else in rotorcraft inventory in any service. It's extremely maneuverable with a rigid rotor system.
While maneuverability is key, survivability is another critical factor that competitors for FARA have to keep in mind.
It's great if you can get there fast and maneuver when you get there, but if you have to be survivable in that threat environment. And one of the things that Raider does is, you don't have a tail rotor system, you don't have a tail rotor drive shaft, you don't have a tail rotor that's flight critical. You can take damage to the tail of your aircraft. You can take damage to the propulsor that you see on the back of the aircraft. Those are not flight critical components. You could lose your propulsor, you could lose your drive shaft, you will still fly home safely.
AVX and L3Harris are working together to chase the Army's FARA program. The joint venture is aiming to build flexibility into the design itself. This translates into lower weight, which has a knock-on effect on costs and maintenance demands. Here is Lance Martin, Senior Manager of Marketing and Communications at L3Harris, giving us a walk around of a mock-up of its proposal.
And so that's a key discriminator in that this aircraft will cost less in the life cycle, cost less to maintain in that flight hour cost. It also makes it lighter and able to go faster. So it's just a multiplier for us in terms of an advantage. You'll also note that Luke mentioned the transmission is a flat pack transmission, which allows us to have this modular bay that allows us to carry weapons, could carry people. You'll see the other side of the aircraft, we have it mocked up for the personnel carry, right? So you can get six people in the cabin. And if you wanted to do extended range beyond even the requirement, you could then put in fuel tanks, right, and fly even further.
The aircraft is an innovative compound coaxial helicopter design with two ducted fans that provide forward and reverse thrust for both high-speed operation and agility.
You can hover level, engage targets without having to be nose down to move. That also benefits you when you're coming in for a landing from a degraded visual environment perspective. You don't have the washout as much. Like if you can come to a hover and then go straight down, you don't have to have that angle coming in that's going to wash up the degradation of your visuals. So we have the integrated cockpit where, again, we reduce the operator workload. You can have two pilots, one pilot or zero pilots, right? Because unmanned is one of the requirements.
The companies also see the platform's modular systems architecture as a big discriminator.
And that enables this to be connected to this mission system, but not that you couldn't take something out and put something else in, right? It's not, you're not locked in to just this system. You can grow it. You don't have to go pay special royalties to go add something else.
The attack element of FARA is a key aspect. In this area too, the contenders must emphasize adaptability. Here's Luke Savoy, President of Aviation Services at L3Harris.
Yeah, so one of the A's in FARA is obviously all about attack. In this particular case, really it's demonstrating we have a modular center bay to the entire platform. We're showing here that one of the configurations of that bay is an articulated arm that basically extends out a four-pack of Hellfire missiles. But the reality is, and according to the specifications of the government, is really to provision for a volume of space that any number of things could go in, from air-launched effects to various weapons, rockets, to Hellfires. What we're showing here is actually one of the smaller things that we can actually fit in there. But the platform must be survivable, must defend itself, and it also must be able to reach out and touch an enemy and provide an effect on the battlefield.
The absence of a tail rotor through the coaxial design brings with it a number of safety benefits.
No, absolutely. I mean, the Army likes to call it the knife fighter. I have personal experience, having been a pilot myself in the military. I've watched urban environment helicopters pick up a wire on their tail as they rotate inside of a tight, confined alleyway space or atop of a roof, etc. Our design really limits that footprint. We don't have a tail rotor out there because of the coaxial design. We use a ducted fan technology that allows us to get to the speeds that we get without putting a gigantic pusher prop on the back. We're able to put the fans on the side of the platform, which really reduces the footprint of the platform to where we are within the 40 by 40 parameter. We're not longer. We're within the same footprint of our rotor system, which gives us the ability to turn and pivot without the worry of picking up something on the back of the aircraft.
The technology within the cockpit has also evolved, notably in terms of the further development of the fly-by-wire systems.
Yeah, I mean, I think fly-by-wire is incredibly important. With an armed scout type of role, and the advancements in sensors, etc., there's a lot of workload that gets put on the crew. And on top of that, then, fly-by-wire allows us to get the very high performance of the platform, but then allows us to bring some automation types effects, whether it's auto-rotate, position hold, etc., that reduces the crew workload, allows them to focus on their sensors, focus on the outside of the aircraft versus on the inside of the aircraft. And those technologies are critical, and we're bringing those to bear on this platform.
While Airbus did not meet the requirements for FARA with its X3 design, the company is still optimistic for its place in the broader arena of future vertical lift technology. This is Matthew Louveau, Executive Vice President of Airbus Helicopter Programs.
Well, I mean, we are very confident of our concept. We had the X-Cube demonstrator a few years ago, which showed a very interesting performance at a very affordable cost. And we think that our concept both preserves a very good flight characteristic of the aircraft, not having speed at the expense of payload, but keeping a lot of payload and mission performance. And also, it's a very affordable solution that doesn't drive up massively the cost of the platform. So we think we have an excellent technical concept. We are getting support from the European Union programs, Clean Sky, to develop, mature the demonstrator about it. We think it might have a military application one day. We were, of course, disappointed not to be selected for FARA, but in the US for the reconnaissance aircraft. But we are open to partnerships if need be, and we'll of course be happy if, I don't know, one day the US reconsiders or other customers are interested in a very efficient and affordable speed concept. We would be happy to propose them the Racer and our X-Cube based solution. I think it's a very good concept, and we are eager to grow it first in civil, but also in military applications in the next years. And we feel it's the speed concept for the 2040s.
With a total of 5 contenders vying for FARA, it's all to play for. The Army is expected to choose 2 of the competitors to move ahead and build a prototype. The US Army is also looking to replace its UH-60 Black Hawk fleet, which is where the FLRAA acquisition comes into play. The US Marine Corps and the US Special Operations Command are both expected to formally join the program as it advances. There are a number of tough requirements, including a hover out of ground effect at takeoff of 6,000 feet and a 3,630-kilogram external payload. There is also a requirement to act as an in-flight refueling receiver or supplier. The 2 main competitors for the program are the Sikorsky Boeing SB-1 Defiant and the Bell V-280 Valor Tiltrotor. The Defiant is in essence a larger version of the Sikorsky S-97 Raider, while the V-280 takes its heritage from the V-22 program, which broke new ground in aviation. Here's Richard Whittle, author of The Definitive History of the V-22 Program.
One of the things that the opponents of the V-22, I think, never quite gave it credit for is that it's not really a helicopter that can fly fast. It's an airplane that can land and take off vertically. And so you get the benefits of the V-22 from the fact that it is an airplane more than you get the benefit of vertical takeoff and landing. And of course, the V-22 itself can't hover as efficiently as a helicopter can, and it's big. But that's why Bell has designed under something called the Joint Multi-Role Technology Demonstration Program a new tilt rotor, a smaller tilt rotor. I think it's designed to carry maybe 11 troops, called the V-280, and the 280 stands for the fact that it's meant to fly 280 knots speed, which is, I think, in the neighborhood of twice as fast as the best military helicopters go. And they have tried to learn from the I want to call them design difficulties, if not design flaws, of the V-22. So,
speed, range, payload, survivability, and reliability were the key building blocks that underpinned the development of the V-280. Here is Ryan Enger again.
Yeah, so speaking about the long-range assault aircraft, and in particular how the V-280, you know, lines up with that. We started our effort in 2013 under the Joint Multi-Role Technology Demonstrator Program, and we looked at the five tenets of what they were looking to do with that future long-range assault aircraft. Of course, at that time, it was future vertical lift capability set 3. And so we focused on speed, range, payload, survivability, and reliability. And when we started with a clean sheet design, we looked at what is our opportunity from a configuration standpoint to significantly and positively impact the speed and range of this platform, for starters. And so for us, for the assault mission, the tilt rotor platform was a natural configuration for us to look at, given the wide success of the V-22, which now has over 500,000 flight hours on that aircraft.
The company applied a number of lessons learned from the V-22 in development of the V-280, from the wings to the engines.
In addition to understanding how the tilt rotor flies, how it behaves, how successful it's been with that speed and range with those components, it's understanding from a maintainability standpoint, from a sustainment standpoint, reliability, what are all the lessons learned we can take from that platform and roll into a clean sheet design. So that's the approach that we took, and that's why you see a lot of differences between V-22 and our V-280 concept with the non-rotating engines, the straight wing, things of that nature. It's getting the improved reliability, improved maintainability, and significantly improved affordability in the platform.
When it comes to addressing sustainability demands, the company looks at the expected threats of the future. Here's Bell's Mark Thompson.
And a lot of things are kind of like Back to the Future. If you look at reforgers, say in the 1980s, you had whole units going over to Germany, living out of farmers' barns and that sort of thing. And when we look at sustainment, we need that sort of sustainment. We need that kind of sustainment where units can be off in small enough parcels that they're not noticeable on satellites. They're not noticeable on the kinds of things that peers will have to hit us up with. We also want to drive self-sufficiency. So we want to drive. We want to drive things like tech pubs right on the aircraft, so they're digital tech pubs. They're connected to the health management system. They tell the maintainer what's needed, and then we also want to tie to things like test equipment on board. So, provide a bus monitor on the aircraft to allow a crew chief to understand what's going on during an engine MOC as you watch it, and those sorts of things. Want to take care in tool selection, because if you are operating out of a barn, you want to be able to do the maintenance with as little, toolkit is available. Kind of drives top to bottom right into what our sustainment strategy is.
The company decided to adopt a clean sheet approach, and not just in terms of air vehicle design.
It's not just clean sheet from an air vehicle design perspective, it's also clean sheet in how we incorporate the digital thread and how we design the aircraft, and that allows us to bring in, to Mark's point, some of these advanced sustainment technologies, techniques, and processes that simply didn't exist 30 years ago or 50 years ago when some of these platforms were initially put on the scene or had their first flight opportunities.
The other major contender for FLRAA is the Sikorsky Boeing SB-1 Defiant, which performed its first flight in the first quarter of 2019 and has continued testing. This is Ken Eland, Boeing's director of its future long-range assault aircraft program.
Flew the end of September last month for a one-hour flight, continuing our power system testbed, radar power system testbed, PSTB, where we're expanding the flight envelope and the capability. We've got that pretty much out to full helicopter speed with no propulsor, so normal helicopter speeds is the flight loads we've demonstrated on the PSTB. We'll continue to push that out from an endurance standpoint. We keep the PSTB 2 times as far ahead as the aircraft. So we run 10-hour blocks on the PSTB, and then that authorizes the aircraft to fly for 5 hours of those loads. We flew last month. We got up to 20 knots in all directions. One of the key elements there for us is demonstrating the correlation to our predictions. We were flying in-ground effect, Higgy, and out-of-ground effect, Bogey. Very good correlation to our torque predictions. That's important for us to understand that aerodynamically we're predicting the right amount of power. And as you transition from Higgy to Hoagy, that's an important inflection point for power to make sure, and those data align very, very well to our predictions.
As of October 2019, the company had conducted 4 flights on the aircraft, comprising 3 hours total flight time.
The acoustics are very good on our aircraft. Actually, we're a little quieter than a regular helicopter. We're operating without the propulsor today. Propulsor we'll look to bring in here pretty soon. We're looking for propulsor pretty much 40 knots and above is where we'll be using the propulsor.
The vibration control system is another key focus of recent demonstrations.
Obviously, with a rigid rotor, we have a little bit more vibration than a fully articulated rotor. The performance that we take from that, we need to make sure we take care of the rest of the aircraft with our vibration control system. We've run that both at 50% capability on the first three flights, up to 75% capability on the last flight, and that's behaving very, very well, keeping all of our vibrations below what an actual Blackhawk vibration level is so far. The other good thing that we've seen so far is actually the vibrations went down a little bit. We didn't predict the vibrations from hover to 20 knots to really go down. They were predicted to stay the same. And actually, they have gone down a little bit as we've progressed out into airspeed.
The company is building up to reaching the Defiant's top speed of 230 knots.
Our plan is to continue that on for the remainder of this year, push out into triple-digit helicopter speeds this year. And then later this year and into next year, we'll start to bring the propulsor online and push out to our top speed points in the first quarter of next year as we continue out, probably in about 49 increments. We've gone 10 to 20, we'll go 20 to 40, and then 40, 80, 120, and then out bringing the propulsor in out past 230 miles.
Flight testing may influence the company's micro design, but its macro design is likely to remain the same.
So the macro design, as we're looking at an integrated, survivable platform to deliver a capability, through the testing that we've done, we have a high level of confidence in that. This is now about the micro. Does our vibration control system work the way it needs to? Is there more tailoring to be done to it? Is there a tweak that we need to make in the prop gearbox or something like that? It's not the macro design of the aircraft. And as we resize it for those things, we have a great high level of confidence in that based on what we've demonstrated from the performance of the aircraft.
So beginning almost 10 years ago with the original studies, the demonstrator companies have shown that they're able to do just a tremendous leap ahead from what's capable today.
This is Mike Hirscheberg, who, as a reminder, is the executive director of the Vertical Flight Society.
And have these, in the case of Bell and Sikorsky Boeing, have these flying demonstrators with this, you know, great technology advance. The V-280 Valor is, you know, takes the basic concept of a tilt rotor, but looks at it from a different perspective, with not only the 500,000 flight hours that the V-22 has, but also with some different constraints. So one of the reasons why the V-22 has a higher download than it would otherwise is because the rotors had to be small enough to be able for the aircraft to taxi past the island on the ships. So that made it have a higher disc loading and a shorter diameter and shorter wingspan than it would have liked to have had for the mission. For the Army, they don't have that requirement, so you're able to have a more balanced design with the performance of the V-280, and also use the lessons learned and the technology advancements in the last 30 years since the V-22 was first designed to make something that'll be much, you know, much more affordable, much really kind of higher performance and more supportable and more effective. And kind of the same thing with compound helicopters. Compounds have been developed and flown for 50 years, but the question has always been: has the cost with the weight and the extra engine or propeller or whatever has the cost been worth the performance from it? And to date, the answer has been no. But Sikorsky, beginning in 2004 with their X2 demonstrator, they've really shown that they can come up with a nice integrated design and have some really impressive performance. And, you know, aircraft development always takes longer than expected. It's hard. So the issues that have prevented Sikorsky Boeing from flying more than six flights has doesn't particularly have anything to do with their technology. These are just doesn't have anything to do with the X2 technology. These are just normal aircraft development speed bumps.
The Pentagon has placed next-generation rotorcraft front and center in its response to the evolving future threats. Carvel Chalk, the Army's Director for Aviation Development, reiterates his view that we are at an inflection point.
And we've reached an inflection point here with the establishment of what the Army calls its multi-domain operations. And it's an inflection point where we finally come to, if you will, the end of looking at rotorcraft the way we have, and we have decided to look at rotorcraft differently and pursue new technologies in an efficient and more effective way and on an accelerated timeline.
Whichever companies come out on top as the Army works through its future vertical lift vision, what is certain is that the next generation of military rotorcraft are unlikely to look anything like today's helicopters. Meanwhile, a similar revolution is about to take place in the urban environment, promising to transform how we move around our cities.
We believe that urban mobility must be a seamless experience where safety and reliability are critical, yet nearly invisible to the user.
We also wanted it to wow you, generate excitement, feelings of anticipation to explore it. We wanted to show you the future is within our grasp and that it is really cool.
People want to move. They don't care how. They don't need to think on which vehicle they need to get. They just want to go from point A to point B, and this will happen.
Next time on Revolutions in Vertical Flight, a revolution is underway in urban transportation, and industry giants and startups alike are currently racing to develop electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. New eVTOL platforms could turn the visions of science fiction into reality, providing low-carbon travel in the urban environment without the need for runways or the other infrastructure associated with earlier types of aviation. That's episode 5, next time on Revolutions in Vertical Flight, available now wherever you get your podcasts. Revolutions in Vertical Flight is brought to you in partnership with Bell. A huge thanks for their support. Thanks also to the Royal Aeronautical Society, the Vertical Flight Society, and the Arthur Young Society for their assistance and access to their archives, as well as to Elfin Aprice and the staff at the Helicopter Museum. In our research, we found The God Machine by James Childs extremely helpful, and it's an excellent read. For those wanting to know more about the tiltrotor, go no further than Richard Whittle's excellent book, The Dream Machine. Revolutions in Vertical Flight was written and produced by Tony Skinner, with script assistance by Jared Cowan and audio edits by Noemi DiStefano. And I'm your narrator, Jennifer Beckwan. Until next time.